Welcome to It's Because of Sports, the podcast exploring the journeys of athletes, coaches, and professional women from competition to careers beyond the game, where sports meets life for athletes, fans, and anyone navigating what's next. I'm your host, Steph Z, and today I'm here with USWNT, otherwise known as U.S. Women's National Team player and soccer analyst, Lori Lindsay. Lori, welcome.
Thanks for having me. Pumped to be on.
I have to admit, like, it was a pretty big moment for us over at Section Z when we got the follow from Lori Lindsay. We were like, wow, the first big name follow. It was pretty exciting. And then, of course, like, I, you know, knew you from when you used to play and when you call games. And then I was just like, oh, when we started this podcast, I'm like, I got to get her on. Like, you have such good experience in so many different aspects of sports. And it's like, I'm really happy and appreciative that you took the time to come chat with me.
Yeah, thanks. No, I'm equally as excited to be on and chat with you about all things soccer and beyond. But also, I mean, yeah, I think it was like you actually followed me or like the supporters group followed me. And then I was like, oh yeah, this is awesome. Because I think that explains and shows the growth of the women's game and the fact that like you all are very much a part of the experience. You're part of the team, and especially with Angel City and how wonderful the supporters have been. So credit to you. And yeah, like I said, excited to be chatting with you.
Awesome. All right. So let's take it back to little Lori. Like, tell me a little bit about like, I mean, I think you grew up in Indy, correct?
Yep.
Like, tell me a little bit about like when you started playing sports, what that kind of meant. Was it an escape? Was it always like a fun atmosphere? You know what I mean? Like, I feel like sports stands for so many different things for so many people. So kind of like take us through what it was like for you.
Yeah, I think that is the exact word that I would use, an escape, but also then a way for me to like showcase my personality. I have a brother that's not quite 2 years older than myself. And really what it came down to is easier for my parents got divorced when I was very young, 2 years of age. So it was easier for them to take both of us around and basically put both of us in the same activities, the same sports. My brother's name is Chris. And
my brother's name is Chris too.
Oh, nice. Okay, perfect. See, we knew there was a connection here.
That's it.
But yeah, it was just easier for my family and my parents to basically throw us both into the same activities, the same sport. And luckily enough, we got along, we liked the same things. And so I went wherever he went. And a lot of that early on in Indiana, I don't think anybody would in the early 80s consider Indiana soccer hotbed, but it was starting to bloom. It was starting to, gather some attention. And it was one way that my dad was really able to be involved, I think, in like our childhood and the fact that like he wasn't going to like sit us down and do our homework with us. Right. So it was like, Right. Okay, how am I going to be involved? How am I going to be influential? And it was like, coach us in soccer, get us in these activities that he felt like we can be successful with. And he could push us in that regard. And we played multiple sports, but really from just like an early age, we both, my brother and I, fell in love with the game, loved learning it. It was a way, like I said, for me to escape. A lot of the, in a way, like, just get away from anything that was maybe going on that was difficult that I couldn't necessarily verbalize or really articulate at that time. But also, I am very expressive in a lot of different ways. And it was a way for me to get energy out, but express who I was in multiple different aspects of physicality, but also it's a very creative sport, in my opinion. So it encompassed all of those things. And yeah, looking back, it feels like just feel grateful that I found that sport. And it's, you know, cliche, but it is the sport that keeps on giving in my life. And
yeah.
Met so many important people and such good friends and stuff throughout.
That's awesome. And I feel like there's so much in there. You know, like it is a way to bond with a sibling. It is a way sometimes that like a parental relationship works better sometimes that way than like the traditional way that people think parents need to. Like you said, like do your homework. Like some parents are better here, there, yeah. Everywhere. When you were playing that young, was there girls teams or you were playing on the boys? There was like one team for boys and girls.
Yeah, mostly until middle school, I was just playing on an all boys team. I was typically the only girl on my brother's team. So a few years older. And that's just kind of how it sorted itself out until late in middle school, I made the decision to go over to a team in my age group, but an all-girls team as well, because I was starting to get into ODP, Olympic Development Program at the time, was really the pathway to youth national teams.
Yeah.
And I was starting to get involved in a higher level competition. And so I wanted to be seen at different tournaments amongst college coaches as well. So that was really kind of like the pathway. But up until then, it was all boys.
And what age did that start at?
I mean, from the time I started playing at 4 years old, whenever my dad...
No,
like,
the Olympic
development program, yes. So eighth grade, I would say about 13 years old.
Did you think at 13 years old, did you know what was actually possible for you in yourself in this sport? Or were you just like, oh, the Olympics seems cool? Like, what was going on in your mind at that point?
No, it was very, 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 very clear for me. And in fact, I've told this story a lot, but it was really my brother that was more determined at a younger age than I was. And I was kind of doing everything he was, but I was like very into skateboarding. I was into playing a ton of different sports. I was doing track and field, cross country, all of these different things. But there was like this period in terms of like me saying that I was like very expressive in a lot of different ways. I thought I wanted to be a famous actress. I think a lot of people do. So I thought I was going to Hollywood. Anyway, dad, like I said, was very, very involved. He would say, like, when we would come home from school, it would be like, okay, don't sit down and do your homework. You have to go out and practice. He had built us a goal in the backyard, multiple iterations of that. But he's like, you have to go practice fast footwork. You have to practice for like 20, 30 minutes before you can even start your homework, which is like basically the opposite of what parents are saying.
Right. Yeah. But awesome. Backwards.
Yeah, exactly.
That would have worked for me too. I definitely like that plan better.
Yes.
If you're too tired, fine, but let's practice first.
Exactly. And like, but I mean, he was like he was a pusher in that regard. And so my brother was very much more self-motivated, I guess is the best way to put it, in the earlier stages. And then in seventh grade was kind of really the breaking point, so to speak, for me, where I was just like, okay, I'm burnt out. I want to do some other things. Like, we were training all the time. We were having to polish our shoes before our youth soccer games, because my dad was like, okay, this is a way to like, you know, show that you respect the craft, right?
Mm-hmm.
And there's so many lessons now that like I still take with me. But at the time, you're just like, as like a 10-year-old, you're like, okay, wait, what is happening here? Anyway, I quit for about 6 months in middle school, about sixth, seventh grade. And I started taking acting classes. So my mom sent me to the acting classes and I was horrible. I mean, everybody in our class actually was horrible, but like one of our leads. And anyway, it was a great like period for me just to be like, take a step back,
explore,
even at a young age, and say like, okay, like now I feel a little bit more in control of like who I am. And it just made me realize like how much I loved the game, how much I missed it. And I loved being able to express myself in that like a physical way. And so that was a real turning point, because after that, after the 6 month period, I like returned to soccer, basically what felt like on my own terms. And then from then on, it was like the trajectory of like, okay, this is what I want to do. But to answer your question specifically, yes, I knew very clearly what I want to do. It was like the 91 Women's World Cup. My dad had subscribed to Soccer America at the time. He would get me VHSs and I would watch highlights of the 91 World Cup. So there was like all of these ways that I was consuming, like, these women are amazing. This is where I want to be, even if I didn't know what it looked like. And I also knew that college was a pathway as well, to play in college. So once I took that break and returned to soccer, it was like full force ahead of like, I just trained on my own. I did everything from then on out because I loved it. And like, this is my goal, is to play on the U.S. Women's National Team, to go to college. And at the time there wasn't professional leagues, but like that didn't matter to me. I was like, I'm making this national team at whatever age. Right. So
that's awesome. Yeah. It's interesting too, because I feel like for you, in a lucky's not the right word, but because it was like very calculated, I think, by your father, the fact that you got to watch that tape, the 91 team, and that because I feel like one of the things that I was going to ask you when you mentioned like bringing up acting and this, like, I feel like as a child that wants to be an actress, there's a lot more role models, or like you can aspire to be a lot more people because there's more messaging around it. And I mean, I understand like in the 80s, like, you know, it's the messaging around women is probably not the best messaging around women, but like there still was messaging that we had. And it's interesting because I feel like that's one of the things that we talk about a lot is like role models and how a lot of these girls now have more and more role models because of the way women's sports is happening. But was there one specific potential role model or someone that like your favorite player or someone you looked up to, or was it just like, this is an amazing group of women and I want to be part of it?
Yeah, I would say it was more that. It was just like, and then it grew from that 91 Women's World Cup team. Obviously, you can look to Michelle Akers, Mia Hamm, right, Julie Fatty, those, all of those players that we know. But then it just grew from the 95 World Cup and then the explosion of the 99 World Cup and what that meant to so many of us, especially being played here in the United States. So, but yeah, just the power of that team and just the role models that they were, and then the accessibility, because once I started playing in ODP and making the youth national teams, they were accessible. There was a lot of times that, or at least a few times that I can remember clearly. And I actually just played in the 77 tournament called TST, which a lot of people are familiar with, like winning the $1 million.
TST is awesome. I almost went to it. I was like, I want to go to the Cary, North Carolina. It's almost like, how, have you been to the Coachella Invitational out here?
I haven't, but I know about it.
It's like this. It's like everyone's just hanging out, walking around, and like I couldn't go. I had a meeting, but I'm like, and I went to college in North Carolina, so one of my good friends lives like in Cary, and I'm like, dude, I'm coming, and then I couldn't get it together. But I saw you guys. Congratulations, you guys won again.
Thank you. Yeah, second year in a row is awesome. And the thing is it's a bunch of former U.S. Women's National Team players mixed in with a lot of young college players that are needed to win that tournament. So, but I was telling Michelle Akers at the very end after we won, we were just having a moment. And because Mia Hamm, Carla Overbeck, all of these people, Michelle, have all been involved with our team in TST the last few years. And I was telling Michelle how instrumental she was to so many of us. But I remembered this moment in particular is like, and I'm bringing it back to the point, like there was accessibility to the full women's national team, because when I was playing on the youth team, a lot of times our camps would collaborate or coexist. This one happened to be down in Florida, and Michelle stayed after training, and I was with the U16 national team at the time, and we were about to start training. I think they had just finished or she had come out on her own, but she was just pinging balls, just like getting reps in. And so they had us stand and receive the balls, like, I don't know, 30 yards from her. And she was just pinging with her left and right. And I'm not kidding. They were, every single one of them was like a yard off the ground, just driven with such precision and literally taking our legs off. And but like, I say this because it just highlighted, one, the level of quality from Michelle Akers specifically, but also the team in general. And to be able to witness that at a young age and just see what that, how gifted she was and like the level that I still had to go to get to, was so paramount at that young age. So, they were instrumental and so important at such a young age for me. And they continue because, I mean, look where we are now. And 100%. So much of that is driven from that team early on and their vision of like what soccer was going to look like in the United States for women and worldwide, really.
100%. That's so true. Things are changing. And I feel like soccer is probably, and you know this answer better than me, but like the fastest moving sport to have that for women. Like we have the WNBA, we have the Women's Professional Hockey League. Like I know that there's a lot of other professional league. We have Love, League One Volleyball, but I feel like soccer has been on this trajectory that it allows a lot of those things that you're talking about to happen. Now, during your journey, right? Like you've had, you know, ever since those 6 months were over and you're like, I'm not going to be an actress. This is my lane. Like I'm going to stay in my lane. Yeah. How did your relationships with sport kind of like evolve through that? Was it always the escape or did it become more of the priority? You know what I mean? Like how does that, and then obviously like into now where you're doing things like TST with like new and up and coming players, you're doing the broadcasting, like take us a little bit through that journey and how that relationship changed, because I feel like you have, you know, like harnessed this in a way where you still get to be part of this sport, where for female athletes, it's kind of hard because there's not as many opportunities after the life of sport, and there's more and more, and like we try and continue to make more and more, but kind of a little bit of like how all that happened.
Yeah. So I would say that it definitely changed. I mean, it became so much more serious, whether I liked it or not. So much of my identity was and still in some ways is. It's not the only aspect, right? There's so much more to me in terms of a personality and a whole human being than just a soccer and sport. But it became intensified because, yes, you play because you have so much joy and it's expression of oneself. And that was very much one of the reasons. But then also it becomes kind of counterproductive in that way, because at the time, that was the only way to make a living, is play on the U.S. women's national team. And so, and when you look at it, there's about 25 to 30 people in the entire United States, that women that are playing on this team. And so the odds are not like too much in your favor. So
it becomes not great.
So it becomes like very intense, because you're competing against really good friends, but you want that position that maybe that you're competing against. So everything becomes much more heightened. But that's also the driving force, I would say, the competitive nature of the U.S. women's national team, and it's what's made it so special for so long. Plus a collaboration within that, of like the vision of making the game better than when you started on the team. But I say all that because it definitely changed. Like, it wasn't just towards the end about joy, even though I found many moments of that. And also it felt like a responsibility. Like, I owed so much.
I was going to say, if it wasn't joy, what was it? Responsibility. Yeah.
And not only to myself, because it was like so much felt like it was riding on that. And all of that's made up, right? You put this external pressure, but it does feel true at the time, especially because playing is such a finite time in one's career and one's life. But I also felt like a sense of responsibility. Like, my family had like so much of their identity was wrapped up in my career as well. It's like, they're going to the World Cup, they're going to Olympics, or like my daughter plays professional soccer, or whatever, right? Like, it becomes a part of the family too. So there's a responsibility in that regard. But then to move along further, what I would say about broadcasts now, and I know I skipped a little bit, but
that's okay.
It feels like, well, one, in hindsight, is always nice, because you can look back and be like, oh, I wish 100%. I would have chilled out a little bit more. But also,
that's why it's 2020.
Yeah. But also, through years of therapy, it does feel like,
which is also very helpful.
Yeah, exactly. That world, being able to be a broadcaster and commentate on women's soccer and just against soccer in general, it feels like I get to do the playing career over again. And I've like get to learn lessons where it's like, okay, I would like to chill out a little bit in this area, or I would have loved to have chilled out in some aspects and realize, okay, this is very serious, but you're also playing playing a sport, and you can have those two things can be very much coexisting.
Yeah.
And I feel like there's so many times where I could have found the joy and played with a lot more freedom that would express like how I am as a footballer more clearly than sometimes I would have, because I was so like, so tight is the best way to put it, because you're just like, I need to make this team, or I want to make this team, right? And there's so much fear also wrapped up in that. So now it feels like in broadcast, even though some of those things show up, it's like, oh, I'm getting to do this playing career over again in a little bit of realm.
Yeah, it's like not a second chance. It's not the right way to say it, but it is like a beautiful thing to hear that you're like, wow, like I get to see, like, because you don't want to change anything that you did, because then you wouldn't be you right here, right now, right?
Right.
So it's like you can't live in regret. It's like all that stuff got you to right here, right now. But in the same sense, you're like, wow, like I have some perspective now. And if I do this slightly different now, and I'm the voice of this slightly different now, maybe that next player won't struggle with it the way that I did, which is a pretty powerful place to be. That's really awesome.
Yeah. And that's actually the whole key, right? Like, I remember, especially with like the U.S. women's national team, it was so clear once you step foot on that team that the understanding is that you're going to leave this team in a better place than when you started, right? And that's like, I feel the same with broadcast. I love it myself and I find so much joy, but it is about opening up avenues. It is about generating, to your point, like you were saying, there's more and more opportunity for women post-playing careers now, whether it's sporting directors, general managers, like any sort of front office, coaching, broadcast. And each of those avenues aren't necessarily for everyone, but it's about being able to pick and choose what works for you. And So yeah, it's about opening doors, and it's also just about hopefully making that specific position easier and more accessible for the next person.
Yeah. And when you say that, like, because you are one of the few women that does this, I mean, more and more for the women's sports, there's more, but you're one of the few that also does men's soccer as well. Like, what does that leadership look like? Like, how do you balance that? You know what I mean? With like just showing up and doing your job, but also being aware that like this is a space that people are looking to you as kind of like, oh, wow, if she could do it, I can too.
Yeah. Well, yeah, exactly. And I take a lot of responsibility with that in terms of like, I understand that there's very few. In fact, like we have two analysts in Major League Soccer that are women, me and Kendra De St. Alban. And she's been within Major League Soccer for a number of years, local broadcaster for Minnesota United for before Apple TV got the rights. But with that said, yeah, I mean, one, let me just start with like, I love covering the men's game. And I get this question. I get the question a lot about like, okay, how do you do both? How do you keep up with both? And to me, there's a lot of synergy because I think both can learn from one another. Yes, Major League Soccer has been in existence longer than NWSL, but still there's like different things that are like, okay, best practices in NWSL that might work and help Major League Soccer, vice versa. There just feels like there's a lot of synergy. And so one, that's great. Also, you know, it is a lot of work. I watch a lot of soccer, right? And so it's not for everybody, but it does feel like there are more and more doors opening. And my experiences within the men's game have been wonderful. Like the play-by-plays I work with, the majority, obviously it's more heavily populated with men in just in the production also the play-by-plays that I work with, but it's been great. A ton of respect. They want to know my experiences within the women's game. And yeah, so I don't think that answered your question necessarily, but there is just like a responsibility there, but then also my experience has been great. And I feel like it's just going to continue. We are seeing more and more women, especially at a play-by-play side, that are coming into, they want that, right? They're actually there seems to be a desire.
That's amazing to hear. Yeah. Like I'm really happy to hear that there's like not a direct, like I've got to do this to keep it up, because like there is that respect and there is that open door and there is that want and need and understanding that more and more women like belong there. You know what I mean? Like, I think that's a really great thing.
Yeah. Don't get me wrong. The fans, I'm sure, are like, who's this woman? So, right. There is an expectation that the standard that
but I think that's changing too. Like, I feel like.
I agree with that.
Completely. Yeah. Like, I feel like, and again, obviously, like, I'm a woman who watches to be honest, I probably watch more men's sports, you know what I mean? Like on TV than women's, but there are women's sports that I follow. And there's just more men's sports to watch on TV, I think, or to find easily, which again is something that I think everyone's trying to work towards, like how to make this more easy for people to find women's sports and do that. But like, you know, I think like my analogy is sometimes when like you have a new broadcaster, like a Tom Brady comes on to broadcast the NFL and you're like, oh, is this guy going to be good? You know what I mean? Like he was really good over here. And it's kind of like the same thing, but I feel like more and more there is respect around women calling men's sports and that knowing that. And I feel like for you being a professional athlete as well, like it probably, they're like, oh, she knows what she's talking about. You know what I mean? I feel like that's kind of the consensus.
Yeah, that does help for sure. But I agree with that. I think there is more respect. There's obviously more women's sports online. So the consumption of it is more accessible. And therefore, you understand that the level of that I played at and all of that, I guess is the best way to put it.
Yeah, no, 100%. So there's been a lot, like we've so far talked about a lot of like successes, like on your path. And it's been like a really amazing and epic like story. I mean, like, I believe you're in the Soccer Hall of Fame, right, as well? Is that correct?
For Indiana, yes. Not for U.S. soccer, but yeah, I've been up for that award.
Yeah. Yep. Can't wait till you get it. I'm coming to the party. But I feel like, what are some challenges along the way? Like, what were the hard things? Like, what were the things where, you know, maybe you were like, I can't do this. I can't continue. Like, did you have any of those moments? Like, I feel like a lot of young women, you know, especially like age 13, 14, like at age 13, you're kind of choosing like, I'm going to go, or around like eighth grade, 13, you know, like you're like, I'm going to go and on this Olympic path. And a lot of girls nowadays drop out of sports at that age. Right. You know what I mean? And I know that it's like appearances, like many different reasons for that. But like, was there any challenges that you faced or moments that you were doubtful in your path? You know, like what would you give some advice around that?
Yeah, mostly mine were in the later years, though, with the national team, because I was fortunate. You know, I made all of the youth national teams. I played college soccer at the University of Virginia. Had a really bright career there. Loved that experience. And then was a top four draft pick to go into the WSA at the time. And then really fortunate to have the longevity of a career that I had, which was playing in all three women's pro leagues. I think there's only like four other, one of five, right, that have done that. So maybe even fewer than that. But I only say all of that because there was such a drive with internally for me for so long early on. And I was able to withstand it and really meet a lot of those goals that I had set for myself. But it was once I got to the national team, you know, it's interesting because sometimes I think that like, oh, what it would be like to play for Emma Hayes now in this, the way that the team's playing, because a lot of times the way that I played didn't always suit the way that we were playing with a national team. And one, let me just be very clear that the players that we had in the midfield were some of the best in the world, right? So it's not like, oh, I should have been playing. That's not it. But like, I had the qualities that I felt like that I could have, you know, had even more caps underneath my belt. And that's just my own opinion. And like, who cares also at this point in time? Like, I feel very grateful for my career. But I say all of that because it was really with a national team where I had like these periods of like where I had to kind of just continue to believe in myself, believe in my style of play, and that like eventually I'd get a real big breakthrough, because I did get called in a year or two after college, one of my first years playing professionally for the 2004 Olympics. I was one of the last ones cut. And then there was about, actually, then I got called back in immediately after. But then there was like about a 3-year break where I didn't get called in, missed the 2007 World Cup. And so it was just more about, okay, continuing to believe, continuing to train. And we were between pro leagues at that time. And to be honest, I was just like, hard-headed too. I was like, okay, I'm going to do this. Like, this has been my goal. I'm not going to stop until this happens. And then Piyu Sundage was our coach. But I feel like it was Hege Riise, who was a Norwegian, like one of the best midfielders in the world, who was Pia's assistant at the time, who was scouting a lot of us in the WPS and just like really valued the way that I played and was a big like supporter of mine. And once I got called in, then I was just a mainstay, and then obviously made the 2011 World Cup and stuff, and went to the 2012 Olympics. So, but that all sums up, like, there were so many periods, which is an interesting question because I don't think we talk about it a lot, because it does look like there's like a trajectory of like, oh, everyone's just on the national team and then you stay. Like, mine's a little different because I didn't battle like injuries, but there's a lot of people who played on the national team and had ups and downs because of injuries or whatnot. Mine was like, I was getting called in, then I wasn't. And it was just like, do I suit the style of play that the coach is looking for? And that's why I bring up Emma, because
I was going to say, do you think the style of your play now is more so you'd be 100% work out better on that team or whatever, however you're just supposed to say that. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and it wasn't like it was ahead of my time. It was just like, that was a style.
Like, what about this style is it? Like, you know what I mean? Like, is there a way to put that in words? Like, what about the style it is that would work more so now with the current team?
Yeah, I think when you even look at like a Sam Coffey, right? When she has players around her and she could connect passes and she's like combining and feeling like the rhythm of the game. I was very much like this. That's what it was about, expressing myself and my personalities, because I felt the game a lot and I understood tempo. And so I think when I use Sam Coffey because I've loved the trajectory over the last 3 years of her career being playing professionally and not making the 23 World Cup team, but now being a real mainstay under Emma. Same thing. She connects. She wants to play passes forward. She wants to take some risks, but she understands, like, okay, I need to just connect this pass, keep possession for my team. She's very much the orchestrator in there. And that's how it was for me. But it's really more about the spacing and the units and the combining and not having to just cover too much ground is like how I would be able to explain it, I guess.
Yeah, it's funny. It reminds me, and I really hope you've seen this meme, because if you haven't, this is going to fall flat. But it reminds me of that like meme or story that goes around that this guy like gives his daughter the keys to a car to like the whole thing is take it here, and he takes it to like, you know, a junkyard, and they're like, I'll give you $200. And he takes it to like, you know, here, and they're like, I'll give you $400. But then he takes it to like a collector, and they're like, I'll give you $200,000. And it's like the same car, but it's like people will value it differently. You know what I mean? And it's like, you're the same player, but it's, and like, even with Sam, it's like different things. But now the way that they value it to put the team together as a unit, you know, works. Like that's the value of maybe the style of play that they're doing now, or however that works. But yeah, it's interesting because it's like the same player, the same value. I mean, it's just how different people need that value to fit into their puzzle.
Absolutely. And that's like, you know, timing. That's what sport is too. It's just like 100%. The timing, it's a luck, age at the time. So there's so many different pieces. So, but yeah, I love that question.
So also, I mean, I feel like you're kind of an outspoken, you know, player. I feel like you're very outspoken in a lot of different ways. How do you kind of, you talk about like equity, inclusion, representation, like how do you kind of balance like when and where that's the time for those conversations and like when and where let's just keep it to soccer?
Yeah, well, they go hand in hand, really. I mean, you're not talking about specifically women's sport without talking about equity, equality. You know, women's sport is founded, in my opinion, like on queerness and just like queer history and the celebration of it all. So, but yeah, I don't think that you can. I think there is like an aspect of when you are talking about those things, but they go hand in hand. So they're not, they're never separate in my opinion. And a lot of that is just growing up with, well, one, my mom is a lesbian. She came out when I was 2 years old. My parents got divorced. She came out, which is like, something also that I've spoken a lot about is grew up in Indiana and like in the early 80s, like you're just you're not seeing that very often, right? And so we lived with my dad, and I mean, it was very powerful because this is somebody that I saw on a regular basis, like seeing how challenging it was, but also not denying herself the happiness and like the authenticity she is, right?
Yeah.
So I've really carried that with me all along. And then also one of my dearest friends ever is Megan Rapinoe, and really sharing like our understanding of our sexuality and very important years on the women's national team that we shared together. So, and she came out right before the 2012, or publicly, I should say, the 2012 Olympics. There's just been, and so when I look at it, and again, it goes back to the whole thing, and like sometimes, well, that's not actually what I want to say. I was just going to say it goes back to the whole point of like when you look at the women's national team and like the whole premise is like, okay, leave that team better than how you started. It's the same though. Like there is a sense of responsibility. You realize how many young players, kids come to games and they look up to you. And then you hear stories about how much easier it was for them to come out or share who they are because you see people in front of you doing that. And so that's so powerful. So for me, they go hand in hand. I think you just have to tune in to like when it does feel right to speak about it and when it doesn't. Like, obviously there's not going to be a goal call and I'm like talking about like,
no, obviously, like, come on. 10 days,
but like, I'm being silly on that, but,
but
yes, I mean, they do go hand in hand, and I don't think you can't speak about one without talking about the other.
Well, it's interesting because I feel like women's soccer especially is the place where, like, I think in sports, for me, the way that I look at it is like sports is almost like the great equalizer. You know what I mean? Like when you go to a sports game, nine times out of 10, if the person sitting next to you has the same jersey on as you and your team scores, you're going to high five them no matter why, you know? So I feel like what sports does and how it brings people together is a safe space almost to talk about some of those things or to see that we're all kind of similar, like we're a community, right? We're in more ways we're the same than the ways that we're different. And I understand there's like different, you know, like I'm not trying to like generalize that statement at all, but I think it is interesting to me, especially where I feel like women's soccer has had more of a platform and done more of the work than any other sport, you know? Yeah. And that's kind of like, you know, like, why do you think that is? Like, do you think it is because there was the group of you that got together and like, this is who we are, we deserve to be here? Or is it that conscious thought of like, people are looking up to us, we have to do this? Because I know it's very personal for a lot of people and there's a lot of ways where it could go south. And I'm sure that there's a lot of players that still don't talk about it. You know what I mean? Like it could be something that could, the conversation could go sideways very easily and like within a team situation be a hard thing. But yeah, like, is there a conscious duty, so to speak, for lack of a better word? Or is it more so like it just feels natural and can be?
Both. And I would put the WNBA women's basketball in that conversation as well as being driving force in this conversation. But yeah, I think it's both. I think it's a duty, feels very much like a duty, and also very natural. Like it is something that I care deeply about. I want people to feel comfortable and safe playing in this within this sport. And there's always more to be done. But yeah, it feels very natural, and I feel lucky to have that platform and to be able to use it within this realm.
Yeah. And so you said a lot how you felt like you could be yourself and that your personality came through when you were playing, you know? So I kind of want to like flip that on its head a little bit and be like, how did being an athlete kind of shape your identity, like on and off the field?
Yeah, great question. I would say, one, I have always, from a young age, I mean, there's like photos of me playing sport and like this like little muscly kid. And it just was very much of a way to get energy out. But I also think mostly the best word to use is confidence. Like it really just helped me build confidence because I didn't want to sit in a classroom and just learn for like the typical schooling that we usually see didn't totally suit me. Like I wanted to be out. I wanted to be running around. I wanted to express how I feel about people through actions and just like showing them. And so soccer was a way and sport was a way to do that. And so I think that that is, it's been like such a wonderful gift to then compete and use it to like, how do I like,
More competitive? Has it made you more compassionate? Has it made you more like, what do you think being an athlete has made you?
Yeah. More compassionate for sure. Yeah. And just like in awe of like what we can do and, the luck, the drive, the commitment it takes for people to get to that highest level. And even if you don't play at the highest level, right? Just like the joy of being able to play with your friends and like just being like, okay, like I like this. I would say, no, I become way less competitive. That's probably has to do, or I know it has to do with therapy as well. Like I've had so many conversations about this. It's like the competition aspect. If I had to do it over again now, I don't think that it would be very difficult sitting in the seat I am now to find the competitiveness to do my career all over again. Because it's less about competing with other people. Like I don't get a ton of joy from that anymore. Like at the time, yes, you're having to compete against, but now it's like, okay, how do I strive in a way to, and strive, I don't even know if it's the exact word, because when I just said that too, I don't know if that feels exactly right, but just how do you continue to find ways to get better and evolve my craft? Because this is what broadcast is. It's very much a craft. I understand that people think like, oh, you just go into a booth and you played a sport previously, so you have this knowledge. But it is like a whole nother, which people don't realize. There's so much that goes into it. especially if you want to evolve, right? And you want to be very good. I have that initial drive because I love what I do and I love the game of soccer. I love thinking about bringing that to a viewer and educating, but also, you know, bringing joy to people's like living room as well. But like, yeah, in terms of competition, so there's more compassion. There's just more just awe. Like talking with Claire Hunt, and okay, this is like top of mind. So I had Kansas City versus Angel City last week, and I was talking with Claire Hutton before the game the day before, and she shared a photo. She's like, I've been meaning to tell you, because like Megan Rapinoe and Meg's twin sister, Rachel, we used to do these Rapinoe soccer clinics together, and we would just kind of travel around the country. And a lot of it had to do with the physical components of the game, because, you know, as we know, there's a lot of injuries, particularly ACL injuries in women's athletics. And so we wanted to add a component into these camps that weren't just about soccer. It was like about physical quality and lifting and understanding your body. Anyway, Claire came to the one in New York back in like 2017. And she's like, Lori, every time I see you, I've been meaning to bust out this picture because I came to one of the Rapinoe soccer clinics. Like,
that's
awesome.
This is
a 19-year-old who's like just like incredible in our league at such a young age and plays well beyond her years. So it's more about like expressing that joy and like how much the game has evolved, and you're seeing these players, like one of the
community around it.
Yeah,
it sounds like.
Exactly. Yeah. I feel, even though I coached Claire when she was like, what, 10 at the time.
Yeah, that's
and,
awesome.
And at this one clinic, she remembers it. So obviously that was like a pivotal point for her to show up to this clinic. And here we are collaborating years later in the way that I get to talk about her as a player and we get to meet in person. And there's just this like, that's what it's about.
Synergy.
For me. It's like the community and just being able to share these experiences with one another.
Yeah, no. And that comes through. Like when I listen to you call games, that totally comes through. Like I feel like you have a very interesting angle, like that you want to everyone to see it through a lens that's like very inclusive and very like in the know. Like it doesn't sound like it's like, you know, too much to understand. So like, no, I love doing that. And even, you know, obviously Angel City lost that game, which was okay. But, you know. But yeah, that's really, it kind of shines through. And I think that it's a pretty special thing that a lot of the players have, which kind of brings me back around to where we started a little bit with TST. Like that seems like such an amazing opportunity for some, I mean, Carly, like you see everyone out there who's like retired, but they come together and it's like, it feels like you're in your backyard playing ball. You know what I mean? Like, obviously it's way bigger and way more than that, but it has the feeling of like, let's just go outside and play right now. And it's just, it's kind of awesome. Like, how did you get involved with that? Was it like, tell me from the beginning, cause you kind of like help coordinate for the US team. Is that correct?
Yeah, no, that's exactly right. But to your point, all of us coming together this year, Carly coming back from her pregnancy. I mean, it is, that's what it is. It was like all of us just, loving one of each other, happy to be together, Kriegs, Heyo, all of us, Joanna Lohman. There's so many of us. And it was just like, I have no ego in terms of playing anymore. I'm like beyond that because I obviously don't play. But it's so, in a way, you could just sit back and enjoy. Of course, you want to win the $1 million and be like, we just won 2 years in a row and you want to have those bragging rights.
Totally.
But yeah, it's just like, ton of good friends hanging out and competing with one another, but also in a different way, right? Because it's just like, feels like less stakes.
Is it always in Cary?
Well, because I'll tell you how it all started. So this is the third year. The first year, two years ago now, there was no women's division. So it was just the men's division. Heather O'Reilly, I don't know, probably 6 months before that, June of 2023 was like, hey, do you want, this is going to be in my backyard because she lives in Chapel Hill. Do you want to put in a team with me and we'll just get like a ton of our
friends
and former teammates? And I was like, yeah, let's do it. And a lot of people were like, no, because they thought we were bananas. And then, of course, some of those players are showing up playing these last two years, wanting to win $1 million. But
that's always how it happens, though.
All
you're always the crazy one in the beginning with the idea. And then if you're like, wait, you're actually going to do it? I totally want in.
Yeah, exactly. So Heyo comes to me and I was like, yeah, let's do it. We put a team in. We're the only women's team in the tournament. We score one goal. You would have thought we won the $1 million with that one goal in the celebration. And then Listen, so Heyo did come to me early on. I helped, but she has been all the credit to Heyo because she has been such a driving force. And really, if this wasn't in North Carolina and it was somewhere else, the impact would look very different just because she has so many resources and such a wonderful community in North Carolina that brings all of us together, makes it what it is. And she's been incredible with all the different resources, but just like her bringing all aspects of it together and just like the little details that are needed to win the tournament back to back. But last year, she was a real driving force for them to start the women's division. Yeah. And originally, they weren't going to give the $1 million prize. So she would push to be like, no, equal pay in that regard too. So, and then obviously the rest is history with us winning back to back. But
That's awesome.
It's so fun. It's so fun. More women's teams this year. So we expanded the pool. And it feels like a mini World Cup in a way, in a 77 World Cup. And it's just fun. It's fun. We're there
so much fun. Yeah. It's like a mini World Cup meets March Madness.
Yeah.
Like the brackets and everything.
I always say US Open as well because they have all these fields around the stadium field. So to your point about wanting to go there as a fan, you could just bop around, you buy the tickets for the day. It's like who's who in soccer. It's such a wonderful
It just feels experience. Like it's very accessible too. It's like players walking around. You know what I mean? It's not
high-fiving.
Like
fans when you go out to the stadium, everything. So yeah, it's great.
All right, next year I'm not gonna miss it. I'm like, all right, I screwed up this year. I should have totally just went.
And now it's fun. You enjoy it.
Yeah, no, totally. So I don't know. I feel like, you know, I mean, one question I want to ask kind of, but I kind of feel like I don't know if I want to ask it. But like, is there from the outside, you know, the life of a professional athlete, like I think, is there like a misunderstood story about that? And I feel like what I'm getting at, and the reason why I'm hesitant to ask it, because I feel like the life of every professional athlete is so different. You know what I mean? But like for someone potentially like you, like, is there a misunderstanding of like your career just went like this and it was easy? Like, is there any misunderstanding like, oh, she's a woman in men's, like calling men's games? Like, is there any like story that you think is like a misunderstanding from people?
Well, I don't think that. I think there's enough now understanding that like a lot of people's careers aren't just like this straight, like,
it's more of a
like
zigzag.
Wonderful path, right? Like, I think people understand there's so much that goes in behind it. But I also just think that like there's so much that like goes into it. Like, a lot of times I do think that people potentially think that it's just like, oh, you're living your dream, so this is fun. And in actuality, like, there's so many challenging times. Like, we've traveled a lot. You're on the road. It is, you're away from family. And yes, you sign up for that. And there's different aspects like, okay, yes, we are playing a sport. So you're understanding that. But there's the thing that I always think that people don't understand is like how much is in terms of why it makes it so challenging is you have to perform, and you have to perform on a consistent basis. Every single week, you were judged on this game. And it's like, who cares what you did last week? If this week goes really well or doesn't, then everybody's remembering that. And it, and for a long time with the U.S. Women's National Team, well, it's still the case in a heightened and different way now with social media, but we were asked to do that for 11 months to be at your best, essentially, for 11 months out of 12 months
of
the year.
How do you do that?
Yeah, no,
like,
it's
how do you, I mean, like, you're a human. Like, how do you, life is happening. Like, how do you get into that quote? I mean, I guess this is why people talk about like the zone, you know what I mean? Like, how do you get into that zone if you're having a bad day?
Yeah. I mean, you're disconnecting. You are literally having to separate yourself. And I think that's interesting thing about competition. And it would be like a whole nother podcast though, and competitiveness, because like it does feel true that you can really only do that for an X amount of time. And then when you really start to dive into like the nuances of who you are and what's like drives you, and then you start peeling back the layers, you're like, wait a second.
What's happening?
So actually now I won't be able to do that ever again. So, but
it was good timing. Good timing for you to figure that out.
Yeah, exactly. I was like, okay, now that I'm finished, let me get into therapy and dive into this in a different way. But yeah, I think that is the, that's the thing. It is that you're judged so much on this like specific aspect. And that's where you see people, like I always say about Meg, one of the things that made her such a brilliant soccer player outside of like how high her ceiling was when she was playing is that like she took the game seriously, but she also didn't take herself seriously. So it was able, she was able to almost like take a step back off the field every time. Right. And then she's like, she's a show person. Like she loves the heightened aspect of performance and not every athlete is like that. So then that's where it's like, oh my gosh, I have to show up again and be as consistent as I was before. Right. So, those are the little nuances. I don't know. Yes, they're talked about, but I don't know if everyone realizes.
I feel like they should be talked about more because like knowing that those things are kind of like a winning formula, like I feel like would take pressure off. I feel like you see that a little bit like with Paige Beckers and how those girls are always laughing in press conferences and stuff like that, UConn stuff like that. Like I feel like that's a little bit of the same, like we have to be serious in this and then the rest can kind of like not be as serious. And maybe that's like how they balance it a little bit.
Right. And also whole nother ball game now with like social media for current players and what that looks like. Right. So it's evolved quite a lot, but the aspects and what you're being asked to do and compete and stuff and expectations on you still the same in a lot of ways.
Yeah. And I guess looking back also, you know, what I think we can all agree that like being an athlete gives you transferable skills for any career, right? So it's like, what transferable skills of being an athlete do you think helped you most in your career now?
Oh yeah, just collaboration. I think two aspects of that though is like teamwork, right? Which you all like you hear a lot and how to work within a group of people. But I think more specifically for me, it's like really trying to highlight, because you're not going to get along with everybody, but it's like really trying to like notice one, what makes people tick, and then two, what they're exceptional at, and then bringing that out, because that's important as life goes on. Like whether it's a romantic partnership, it's just like, okay, like what am I bringing to this relationship, or what am I bringing to this team? What am I bringing to this production as we go live to bring this game to people's living rooms and to their homes? And like, it's like, okay, when I'm working with play-by-plays, and I work with consistently a lot and they become family members, it feels like at this point in time, but it's like, this person is exceptional at that. And just noticing that, right? And just being like, okay, this is a wonderful quality. Let's highlight that. And like, how do I play off of that and vice versa? So I think it's more about, instead of being like, oh, you're not good at this or that, it's like, no, you're exceptional at this. Let's work with that. And I feel like sport has allowed me to be able to notice those things, because those are what bring out the best in, whether it's playing in a game, whether it's doing a broadcast, whether it's just like family, right? So there's a lot of those, a lot of that that you can bring to your everyday life.
I feel like if we could all do that, the world would be way better really quickly. I feel like that's like the answer to world peace right there.
All right, listen, this podcast, we're figuring it all out.
We figured it all out. We can stop there because we've got it all figured out. But wow, that was, I mean, it's so true. Like that is just, that's like what we as humans should all be about. You know what I mean? And it's crazy because we're all capable of doing it because we do it in certain ways. Mm-hmm. But, you know, we forget, or we feel threatened, or we feel triggered, or whatever it is. You know what I mean? And, but yeah, that is such an amazing thing. And I do think that being an athlete kind of does help, awareness around that. And that's a really good answer.
Yeah. Well, also helps because too, I think within sport, everything feels so competitive and just sometimes in life, right? When you're just like a little bit, unsure about like what's happening with yourself, different periods in life and day to day too. But it does, when you start to highlight other people's qualities too, then it just like makes it easier to be like, oh yeah, well, this is what I bring. It's a little bit more ease on oneself and compassion. In that regard.
Right. So everyone listening right now, just go out and find someone and tell them something good about them. That is your task. That is your to-do. We are leaving everyone with that to-do. In the comments, only write things that are good about this podcast.
That's funny.
But yeah, no, I really, really appreciate you taking the time to come and chat with me. It was really great to get to know you a little bit better. I will definitely be at TST, and hopefully our paths will cross in real life before that. But thank you again so much for your time.
Yeah, thanks, Steph. I really appreciated the conversation.
I want to thank Lori again, and thank you all for listening. Be sure to like, subscribe, follow, you know, all the things you do wherever you find your podcasts. Until next time, have a good one.